You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Real quick before we start the show, just wanted to let you guys know you can get the show 2 days early by joining our Patreon. Even for a buck, you can listen to the show 2 days early. Go to patreon.com/analogtalk, and we got a bunch of stuff over there. Check it out, and enjoy the episode. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Tim.
I'm Chris.
And today on the show, we have Mr. Ben Frateralli. Hey, Ben.
How's it going, guys? I'm a active listener of the show, so it's pretty surreal to be on it and to see you guys' faces. Yeah, this is this show is like meditation for me, and it's a way to plug into the genre of film photography, and I love what you guys are doing. So very honored to be on the show.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate that, Ben. So do you mind giving our listeners an intro to who you are and what you're doing and how you got started and all that stuff?
Yeah, sure. So I am the host and creator of the YouTube channel In an Instant, which is an instant photography centered channel, which is all about instant film. It's about the history of instant film. It's about reviewing cameras. And I have, you know, new plans coming up. We'll talk about that later. But when I started shooting, it was as a child. I mean, I had disposable cameras. I had Polaroids. I mean... I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I was just like taking photos of feet and photos of my mom, like really poorly centered. But it was something that I was interested in. It was something that we always had around the house. Again, I had no clue what I was doing, and I didn't really develop any skills or anything as I was in middle school or anything until I was a fan of the Arena Football League, which was this minor league that had been around for 30 years. And I am the kind of person who gets so obsessed with things that I like have to go as far as I can with everything I'm interested in. So I was like,
oh, yeah.
All right, I love this league. So I'm going all in on this. So I made this website. I was 13 years old. I'm like hiring writers who think I'm like 40.
Oh my god! I
started a podcast. Like, this is before podcasts existed. I was like, I got to take photos at the games. I got to take video. So I basically developed like a skill set at a fairly young age of taking photos, video, and editing and all that, simply from being a fan of this league and wanting to make stuff. And it sort of led to me finally developing like some sort of talent, or at least understanding of what I was doing. And then I, you know, went to college, so that sort of subsided for a bit, and then I moved to LA, and then I drove back, and then once I got back here to New York, which is where I'm centered, I got a job at NBC, and a production company in Westchester. And that is when I sort of very seriously my career path of becoming a director and a photographer. And over time, I eventually became freelance. And that's sort of where I am today in quarantine making YouTube videos.
Yeah. So your videos are, me and Timothy have been gushing over them the past couple of weeks.
I appreciate it.
There's a lot of people who come on the show who are so good at the YouTube game that I feel like, all right, I'm just going to quit because I don't like what? Just your wealth of knowledge. Specifically on Polaroid, I have so many questions. Where did your like love for Polaroid start, first of all?
Well, I shot it as a kid, mm-hmm. but I didn't value or really understand what it was when I was, mm-hmm. you know, 4 years old. And I think a few years later, probably like 5 years ago, honestly, I was gifted an Instax Mini and I sort of was taking photos on it.
Yeah, the Gateway.
Oh my gosh. Now I'm like remembering all of this stuff from back in the day. I was looking at old photos that we took. I mean, we have hundreds of Polaroids. I mean, they're all over the place in my office. And I was just really appreciating how much of an artifact it was and understanding that finally that this is a real thing that only existed in that moment when we took the photo. And it's unlike anything I'd been shooting on digital for so long and sort of getting a little bit exhausted with digital, that having something so real was pretty stunning and honestly reactivated my entire interest in it. And I take things to their extreme. So I was like, all right, now I'm going to do this YouTube channel. However, I was a little bit reticent about doing a YouTube channel because from the photography perspective, photographers make YouTube channels and it's awesome and it's like supplementary content mm-hmm. to photography. And I think it's fantastic. But in the directing video production world, it's a little bit different. There's like a little bit of a different perspective on what YouTubers are. They're like, YouTubers are YouTubers, directors are directors, and they don't always mix or they're not always like expected to be mixing. Yeah. And I was a little bit nervous about that. So it took me a while to sort of launch the channel, but I also put tons of effort into it, as you can see. I mean, I really pre-produced it a lot and made sure it was, you know, all the same aesthetic and sort of thought about a lot what I was doing and writing it. So I really appreciate that you guys dig it and that it has some audience so far.
Oh yeah, I feel like it's really, especially now that everybody's just like laying around at home.
Right.
I sit on my phone and I watch YouTube. I sit on my computer and watch YouTube. I pretty much know everything that's on there. You know what I mean? Like if I've searched, you know, Polaroid, like I've seen every video on Polaroid.
Right, you're a YouTube scholar.
And then like you popped up because I, you know, Polaroid dropped the new camera. I type in Polaroid now. There's like one 14-second video on their channel, and then like your video on the now. And I'm just like, holy shit, where did this guy come from? Like, what is this? Like, nice. It's about time. Like, I've seen other people, I forget what it was. It was on your Instagram, on your stories. Like, somebody was just like, I've been waiting for a channel like this to pop. And I felt the exact same. Like, I'm so stoked on what you're doing. Like, it is definitely well produced and just like funny. And I mean, the stuff that I've learned, I bought two cameras now because of you since the channel.
I love it.
Like, it's,
didn't mean to do it.
It's a breath of fresh air, and it's just like got me all stoked on shooting Polaroids again too.
Yeah, so you're the perfect guest for
for Polaroid Week.
You're the perfect guest for Polaroid Week, exactly.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I honestly don't think I would have made the channel if there were other channels like it already. Like, there's plenty of Polaroid videos and a lot of great photographers that have great YouTube channels that make videos about Polaroid, but I saw there was kind of a market for this like instant film centric thing. And so I was like, I guess I'll do this. I mean, once I decided, I guess I'll do this, I had to fully commit to it and, you know, start preparing. And honestly, I mean, the COVID thing, as terrible as it is, it did create this like window for me where work was slowing down a bit. And I was like, okay, now I gotta like really push this now. So releasing videos every week, you know, they're very involved videos, but I'm glad to be helping some people out who, you know, want to watch something right now.
It's always scary taking the YouTube leap too, just hearing you say that, because I always forget that it is kind of split, you know. There's like actors and directors, and then there's like YouTube people. And you know, YouTube's finally now starting to get some like credibility in the big world, I guess, and which is cool. But also, like, you know, I've tried doing YouTube videos for a while. Like, anytime I do it, it just sucks the life out of my photography. Like, I end up shooting just for YouTube because that's, like, my shtick. I don't really have, like, a, like, I'm not, like, a Polaroid channel or something, or, like, an instant channel. So it's kind of hard to just, I don't know. Do you ever feel any of that since you've started doing the channel?
Yeah, it's an interesting balance because you're like producing a video, but you're producing art and you're maybe making stuff while making videos that you wouldn't necessarily ever share with anyone. And like all of us take tons of photos and they're not necessarily photos you want to share. But if you're making a video, you have to share them because you made it for the video. So I definitely, luckily so far, I've been making videos where I can show sort of a curated mix of photos. I think the only time I really ran into what you're saying is with the Polaroid Now video, where it was the Polaroid Now. It just came out. It hadn't even come out yet, actually, when I was shooting that. So I kind of had to share the photos I had. And they weren't necessarily the photos I was like proud to share, but I thought it was still important to like show people what this camera can do. And I am planning to do in the future a more involved, longer videos that are about a project I'm working on or documenting something and maybe portraiture or a studio session. And I'm actually starting to shoot one tomorrow about this long project I've been working on. So yeah, I think I'm going to run into that a little bit. And it's a multitasking thing also. That's just like left brain, right brain, a lot to consider. It is.
I wanted to ask you Polaroid questions. I don't know.
Yes, please. I've mentioned. I'm a little interested in it.
Let me get my pen and paper out.
I couldn't tell. I've mentioned before, I'm reading this book about the Kodak and Polaroid lawsuit that happened. It's a lot of information, so it's taken me a while because it starts at the very beginning of like where he started with Polaroid, and there's just so much knowledge in that book that I'm learning bit by bit. I guess I want to ask, like, how did you get into, like, are you obsessed with Polaroid or instant, or is it more like instant in general? Or
yeah, that's a good question. I think there's like a distinction for sure. Yeah. And as I'm getting into like the community, you see people that are like, I love Instax, I love Polaroid. Right. Some people that are like, I shoot everything. But I think there's aspects to Polaroid that are very culturally grounded and impactful to history in a way that Instax simply doesn't have. And I think that I've read that book. It's an amazing book.
Yes.
And it's really an the lawsuit stuff is incredible. But yeah, I think I'm very, very inspired by Edwin Land as like an inventor and as like an American, a great American inventor, essentially. And I think that what Polaroid represents is pretty profound, and what they accomplished was so incredible that I have an allegiance to the brand of Polaroid. Yeah. And the history of Polaroid is so interesting. And that's the kind of stuff that Fuji just doesn't really have.
Yeah.
It's sort of a huge company. They make all kinds of products. Instax is just another thing on their docket. And so I find it more interesting to dive into everything Polaroid, certainly. But I do love Instax, and I think I'm actually curious what you guys think about the differences between the film stocks, because I love both for different reasons, but some people are just like, I hate the Instax color, I love the Polaroid color, I hate the Polaroid color.
I think you nailed it on the head in one of your videos where you said like the Polaroid brand is for like the artist type, you know, and then the Instax is for like party, have fun with your friends and stuff.
Right, right.
So they both definitely have their place, I feel like. I mean, Timothy and I, we've been like obsessing a little bit because it's Polaroid week and like your channel and the book that I'm reading where I'm like, Edwin Land was a freaking genius. And like,
he's a god.
Yeah, he is.
It's like, and I know now I know why Steve Jobs said that he was like, he's one of his heroes because of just creating something from nothing is insane.
Yes. Yeah.
And he started off, I'll just paraphrase a little bit of the book. The reason Polaroid happened was because like is somebody in his family, cars didn't have polarizer on their headlights. So people who drove at night like could crash into each other and die. And somebody he loved like, yeah. So he like tried to create polarizers for headlights, and then it turned into the whole, you know, polarizers for like all the stuff in the war that went on and his career there. And then he just was like, I want to create an instant photograph. And he like out of like,
and he did it.
He did it
with
like his brain. Like, what the?
I mean, that's what like the Impossible Project, the name the Impossible Project symbolizes.
Yes.
It's that Edwin Land was like, here's this thing, polarized glass, which people thought, oh, you can't do it.
Yeah.
People told him you just can't do it. And he said, all right, I'm in college. I'll figure it out.
Yeah. He was like a kid. He was like 20 years old.
It's incredible. And so like those sorts of that vibe of just like picking yourself up and doing something that changes the world is something attached to the Polaroid brand to me. And I know a lot of people don't even think of it like that. You know, they're just like, oh, it's Polaroid. I remember the 90s.
Yeah,
exactly.
Or the 80s or whatever. And so it doesn't really hold that kind of weight for a lot of people, but I personally think of it that way. And so in terms of the different stocks, I think it's kind of interesting. Instax, this is going to be kind of an incendiary thing to say, and I don't know whether you guys will agree, but I think Instax film right now is kind of similar to Polaroid film from like the 80s and 90s. And I think a lot of people write that off. They're like kind of gotten used to the imperfections of Polaroid. And they're like, this is what makes Polaroid Polaroid. But in reality, what Instax color is right now is really what Polaroid looked like back then. And even the film, when you hold it, it feels like a vintage Polaroid. It's thin. And so I think there's a lot of like baked in loyalty to Polaroid, which is great because it, you know, it's keeping the brand going. Yeah, I don't know. I think it might be a little bit misguided, people's disdain for Instax.
Yeah, and it's funny how people who don't know, it's like the Kleenex thing. It's like all tissue is Kleenex and all instant photos is Polaroid. Like I have stopped correcting people because I feel like this is such a jerk. You know?
Yeah, I feel like a dick when I say that.
Because be like, oh, it's
actually,
let me tell you all about Edwin Land and how
Polaroid
he did this.
Polaroid was founded.
See, I still love Instax. Like I'm scared for Instax because you know they probably have like 12 barrels of the chemicals left, and they're not going to tell anyone until it's completely gone. But I think it's a great, like, just like you, an Instax Mini was your way in to remembering the fun of all this, you know. And same with me, I bought a Polaroid branded Instax Mini and fell in love. Was bummed that they were so small, but it was. You know, it was my way into remembering of like how amazing that process is. And I think we also take that for granted because we have, you know, cell phone cameras and we have instant photography, like instant photos all the time in our pocket and stuff like that. But to actually like watch it come to life and then you get to like give it to somebody. Yeah. That is my favorite thing. Like when I'm walking around town with my SX70 or even like a Sun 660 or something and they're like, wow, I remember that. And I'm like, dude, let me take your picture. I'll give you the photo, you know. Like just being able to do that, like, and to get the gears turning and stuff.
I have a special place in my heart for instant, most also because my fiance, that's how he proposed to me.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
So I'll tell the short version. Actually, Birgit had a hand in it from Lumography. He reached out to her and was like, I want to propose to her. And she sent film. And basically, it was part of a contest a contest for them to like push out their instant cameras. She was like, we want like Lumo Amigos to help us. We're going to do this contest to take pictures of them and their significant others. And she's like, I don't know if you have a significant other or if you have a camera. I was like, I have both. I'll do it. Like, no problem. So a few days before I left to go home for the holidays, he was like, you got to do your Lumography thing. Let's go to this park and take pictures. So I was like, okay, sure. So we're like taking like couple photos. And the last one, he was like, he basically held up the ring in the photo. And as we're watching it develop, I was like, what are you holding? And then I turned and he got down on one knee and was like,
oh man, that is so good.
So those are framed in our living room. And he was like, oh, by the way, there was no contest. Birgit was in on it. And I set up the whole thing. And I was like, what? It was so elaborate. Because she emailed me like weeks and weeks ago. So
that's amazing.
Is awesome.
Yes.
Wow.
Man. Maybe I'll post that photo.
Please do. I want to see that. I think it's interesting, you know, just hearing you say that. What Instax kind of represents too is honestly what Polaroid was back in the day, which was the camera you take around and you take photos and not necessarily worry that you're – I mean, Polaroid was always kind of expensive. It was more expensive than 35mm film, obviously. But when I look back on my old Polaroids, they were just a slice of life. You know, they weren't necessarily only for – creating art. And I think what Instax is doing is providing people with a camera that they can go out and shoot with, and it costs 50 cents a shot or something, you know, negligible. And it's providing that cultural touchstone still for people. Whereas Polaroid, you really got to think about it, you know, unless you, you know, are making bank how much you're wasting your film, and you have to, and some of that is very helpful because it kind of makes you more considerate when shooting. But I don't know. I think there's definitely huge value to both. That's an incredible story.
Yeah, I love that. I love it. I love the fact that Polaroid is the artsy film because it's, and I didn't realize it until you just said it, that like the Instax do feel like the older Polaroids. Cause I found a couple old Polaroids from like when I was a kid recently digging through a box of childhood photos that was given to me, and they are a lot thinner. I always forget that they're fatter now because they only, you know, hold 8 to a pack and all that stuff. I always forget that.
Yeah, it's pretty shocking when you hold it now. I actually kind of like the thicker film. I hate that it's only 8 shots per pack, but I love it feels much better in the hand and like a much more solid object.
Man. So good. I'm just, I posted on my Instagram, was it yesterday? It was either yesterday or the day before. I found like a Spectre camera for $5 in the box.
Yeah, what the heck? How did you find that? I saw that.
Dude, it was so funny. We were going to take some old clothes and like kitchen stuff that we didn't want to the Goodwill. And there was a box. They had like a huge like grab box outside of just like people dumping stuff. And I don't even know how I saw it, but I saw the corner of it sticking out of the box and I ran over there. And our Goodwills have been closed for the whole COVID thing this whole time. So, but their donation center's still open because, you know, just recently we had the hurricane or the tornado down here and like all this stuff. So they're taking a bunch of clothes donations and stuff. But I saw it and I saw the guy working there. He was just like an older dude sitting down, smoking a cigarette, not caring that I was rifling through a box of stuff. And I was like, hey, I'll give you $5 for this. I was like, you probably won't post it for any more inside. And he's like, oh yeah, take it. He's like, don't even get. And I was like, take the $5, buy a pack of cigarettes, like whatever, you know what I mean? Like, so yeah, I walked away with that. But it was just funny because like your Spectre video just came out, and like I was always like I wasn't one of those like diehards that was like, I'm never shooting Polaroid again when Spectre was shut down. But like I was definitely brokenhearted when they discontinued that film. So it's just funny like how in your video you're saying like the 600 film, the I-Type film is so much more profitable, and like there's more of a group of people that want to shoot that film. And it's just like, man, if there's something that's slowing them down and potentially hold them back from like letting me have my film, like I do not want to go through the heartache of like 2008 or 7 or 9 or whenever the hell it was when they called it quits ever again. So I mean, like, you know, cut the fat off that and try to
It feels very precarious always, and it's sort of a weird thing to have to live with.
Yeah,
it's like you always feel like the next pack you buy could be the last one that ever exists or something. There's something about it that makes that special too. I think of things that I document with Polaroid a little differently because they do feel like a special artifact because maybe this won't exist forever. Even stuff I'm shooting on Spectre right now, knowing that Spectre is going extinct in 20 years, maybe Polaroid will still exist in some form, but I'll be able to look at this Spectra sheet and be like, wow, remember this? Like this being captured with this chemistry and this sheet of film can never exist again. And in general, also, I think of that with Polaroid because I love taking photos of people and like vintage architecture. Those are sort of the two things I shoot a lot. And with people, I'm not collecting people necessarily. Yeah. Like my basement's very clean, but I love collecting these photos of my friends, my family, anyone I interact with, because it's like, you know, you've captured them in this very unique format that, like you said, I mean, it could go away, and they're very special keepsakes, and especially to give one to someone. I mean, they can have that forever. Yeah.
Are you shooting your Spectra? Because a lot of people, myself included, like I just will hoard it now because it's gone. Yeah. Like I have so many stuff that's discontinued that I just like don't shoot now, and I'm collecting the box. It's like ridiculous.
Yeah, I know. I went to Brooklyn Film Camera like soon after it was announced, and I just bought like 10 boxes, and at first they were just sitting in the fridge.
Yep.
And I took one out and I shot it, and it was having developer problems, like some of the glitches that they were having I was experiencing. And I was aware of this, that you can't really let Spectra film sit that long. Like there is a, or any instant film, obviously, but especially Spectra, which was a more precarious release for them that had more faults. If you wait, those faults are only going to be worse. So I'm sort of in this period right now where you know, the production runs from the middle of 2019, I'm like getting nervous and yeah. I'm actually using them. I'm using them out a lot for this project I'm working on where I'm going through the Hudson Valley of New York and finding these like 60s signs and buildings and these incredible just facades of theaters and things like that that are probably going to be demolished soon. And I'm using Spectra a lot cool. because the format is like perfect for it. It's got the aspect ratio that I need for that. And yeah.
That's perfect.
I don't know. It's tough with hoarding.
Yeah, but having a series, a photo series or like a you know, a specific goal really helps with not hoarding, you know?
Yes. Yeah. It forces you to keep burning through sheets.
Yeah. Cause I won't like just walk around and shoot nothing, you know? I'm like, it needs to be special now because it's not, there's not a lot of it anymore. I would like to highlight one of your videos if I can. The Polavision. So I had seen like that Polavision camera like at thrift stores and I just thought it was a regular, you know, Super 8 camera. I never had.
Right.
Known that there was a whole like separate, it was a develop in the cartridge and you could put it in what? And then the Edwin was like, this is what I want to do. And everyone was like, no, don't. And it like ruined everything.
No, don't.
Like, can you talk about that a little bit? That's crazy. Yeah,
can you don't?
Yeah.
A Polavision is one of those discoveries that I found sort of in my research that, again, like you said, I knew it existed, but I didn't know like what that really was. And once I figured it, once I found out that it was instant picture movie film, and that's instant in the way that the film sheets were, my mind was blown. Yeah. And then the implications of developing that product and it eventually leading to Edwin Land, because of how badly it failed, getting not fired from Polaroid, but kind of being pushed out. What an insane piece of history that I don't think many people really know.
I didn't know.
Yeah, I had no clue.
There's a lot of stuff in Polaroid's history that people don't know because it's like, not a currently active pop culture product.
Mm-hmm.
Like people sort of know the history of Apple because they use their laptops every day and their phones, but people don't realize there were these like insane product releases, you know, in the 70s and 80s that almost destroyed entire companies. And Polavision was, I mean, it's an incredible product when you feel it and you pick it up and, you know, you run the motor. It feels like an SX70. It's the same quality as an SX70. Wow. And as users of Polaroid cameras, we're kind of used to the plastic ones and the SX70. Like those are the two separate things.
Yeah.
So it's weird that there's this third object that is of the SX70 ilk that you can hold now. And I actually sent some of my cartridges up to Canada for the Noah, who runs the YouTube channel Analog Resurgence, is going to try to expose the cartridges.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, you can try this. I preferred to have them on my shelf, but if you want to try that, go ahead. Yeah, it's so absurd. And a lot of the stuff that I'm discovering now, just in my research, planning videos, writing videos, I have this video coming out in 2 weeks about the history of Instax, and that's not really something anyone really knows. The history of Instax is extremely weird. And I keep finding these weird, quirky things. And I'm having a blast, especially now, like pretty much locked indoors.
Yeah,
so,
it's perfect. Where did you find the actual Polavision TV thing?
Oh, my God. I think I got that on Etsy.
Really?
Wow.
It was one of those things I saw it and I ordered it immediately because I was like, I need that. I need to have that now. And sort of that night started writing the script for the video. I was like, once I discovered what this was, I immediately was like, all right, we're doing this.
It's just wild. Like, again, like I had no idea that that existed. Mm-hmm. Just like you said, Chris, I saw the cameras. I even saw one of the TVs at one of our like antique malls that we have here, but they had it for some like absurd price. And I was like, I don't even know what this is for. Like I just thought it was like a Polaroid branded television from the, you know, 70s or something. But, you know, I love when you said in that video, too, that they that the 35 millimeter film that they came out with that you develop in the crank thing, like they had like blueprint film. And then there was like regular slide film that you could like, I talk about him all the time on this show that he's like the 90-year-old photography guru that I kind of just fell in love with. My Mr. Bob, he gave me me like 15 packs of that Polaroid film with the cartridges and they're still fresh. He like freezes and refrigerates everything the crank. And it's just like such a wild experience. I can't believe I never shared any of those photos. I need to find them. There's somewhere in one of my
I need to see me some
it's
of that.
Just because I shot the blueprint because they you know, they had it like instant for blueprint slides for like, you know, architects to make duplicate copies like on the job and stuff like that. It's just such a weird concept because
it's funny to think about the uses, the other uses of Polaroid. Yeah. Where like every time, like when you look at the Job Pro camera, which is like that yellow thing, they're like, you can take photos of construction sites before demolitions. And it's like, all right, I guess this was the other use for seeing photos immediately.
Yeah.
Like there were a lot of, and medical, like the Spectra camera that shoots teeth.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just going to bring that one up.
The Macro 5, like it, you would never think of that now. Now, but it's hilarious the other uses that the Polaroid had.
That was it, especially like even in production, like all the makeup people take continuity photos now with their phone, but back then it was they all had the Polaroid. Oh, yeah. So there's so many like amazing just snapshots of like amazing actors just like in their costumes.
Oh my God.
You know, like,
yeah. Now that you mention that, I went to a exhibit about 2001: A Space Odyssey. In the city or in Queens, and there was a ton of incredible artifacts from the movie, but some of my favorite stuff was just looking at the Polaroids from on set. Oh my God. I mean, it really blew me away because when you look at, you know, cinema lighting on Polaroid, it's stunning the detail that they could capture even on something so small. And seeing the sets of 2001 and seeing Stanley Kubrick and all the actors on peel apart film was just like,
wild.
I almost walked out of there with something on the wall. I almost was just like, all right, Lauren, go run some interference or start a small fire. Start a small fire. I got to go take this bite.
Do you ever mess with any of the peel apart stuff anymore? Or are you kind of?
I haven't. Yeah. Honestly, just the prices really turn me off because I know that I'm a runaway train when I get into stuff. And if I'm starting to spend like $75 on a pack of 10 sheets of film, it's going to be the end of me.
Yeah.
So true.
You know, it's my wallet is going to just jump off the bridge. So I got to make sure that I keep it. I mean, even Polaroid film in general is very expensive, but that just seems like a slippery slope.
Yeah, especially because like sometimes you just don't know what, especially if you're going for like Polaroid branded film. Like I got a couple boxes that were, you know, listed as fresh and refrigerated and all that stuff of the 669 film. It was like a really pink and turquoisey looking film. And I mean, it still works, but it's like a ticking time bomb. Like, I don't know.
Oh, I know.
Every Polaroid week, I'm just like, this is the week I'm going to shoot it. Cause I always feel bad shooting like peel apart Fuji film, like on Polaroid week. And, you know,
a betrayal.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, that's not Polaroid. But, yeah, I think I have to dig that out before the week's end.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a curiosity of mine. Like I was saying, like with collecting visuals, I guess you could say, with Polaroid, where you're actually producing something physical that you're storing. There is something that definitely appeals to me about getting something on that format before it vanishes forever. But I don't know. It's just, I'm not sure. Maybe I'll visit Super Sense offices and take a photo there.
Right.
But
yeah.
I haven't heard anything on that in a while. I hope that's still...
Yeah, they have that documentary that was going to come out that was all about Caps and the history and build up through the Impossible Project to Super Sense, but then COVID happened, so it's like, I don't know what the heck's going to happen. Yeah.
I hope it comes out soon because I want to know all of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, same, because I was such a fan, and still, like, the Impossible Project, I wish they never would have had to rebrand. I mean, I know Polaroid is, like, near and dear to our hearts, but, like,
they had to.
The story of Impossible Project, and even I was, like, looking up on eBay the other day, because that's all I do now is look on eBay, and there was, like, Impossible Project swag. There was, like, a sticker pack, like, some buttons that came with it. It was
oh, I know,
it was,
yeah,
like, when you were, like, a contributor when they first started doing everything.
Yeah, they had, like, a membership card.
Yeah.
And this guy was selling his whole lot, and I was like, do I really buy this? Like, I really want it, but what, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, a couple years ago, I had a film in this festival, and the opening night film was this film called Instant Dreams. Have you guys seen it?
I saw it, yes.
Oh my God, it is insane. It's so trippy.
Yeah,
it's like
very
not
weird.
It's very weird and probably not for everyone.
No.
I honestly had to watch it twice because the first time I was... It, just for anyone who hasn't seen it, it's sort of a surrealist take on... I feel that the filmmaker was trying to make something that in itself was so artistic that they may have lost sight of like the narrative a little bit.
there wasn't enough of what I wanted to see in it.
No. There's a lot of like CGI chemistry explosions.
Yeah. I need to see this. I've yet to see it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's on iTunes.
It's on iTunes.
Watch it.
I will.
Yeah. It gets into the Impossible Project stuff a little bit, but again, a lot of CGI chemical explosions, if that's that's what you're in for.
Yeah.
I would dose on some LSD maybe before watching.
Man, that sounds wild.
Yeah, that documentary, like I said, there just wasn't enough of what I wanted, what I was hoping for it to be. So when you mentioned that other documentary.
Yeah, it looks a lot more informational in a, like a charming way.
Yeah.
It's not like the history of Polaroid is, you know, it looks like it has a personality to it, but... And obviously, as a filmmaker, and I've always thought about this too. I mean, I could do something longer form.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if YouTube is sort of my gateway drug into maybe doing something more long form. And I do want to do some long form stuff for the channel. But when you get into, you have to start interviewing people. I mean, the travel costs alone.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah. But it's cool. I'm glad stuff's still being made about the history of that period.
So when you were out in LA, was it for like the film industry, I'm assuming?
Yes. I graduated from University of Maryland. I was like, they did not have a film program. They did not have much for artists, honestly. And I was self-learning most of that stuff in college. And so my decision was I'm getting in my car and I'm driving across the country and I'm going to
enter the
film industry.
Yes.
Yeah. And it was... incredible doing that. Mm-hmm. I think that experience in itself, the action of doing that was absolutely changed my life. It was amazing. But once I was there and I had lots of meetings and I met a lot of really interesting people and I was working on some projects and learning a lot of stuff, once I was there, I still felt this sort of hollowness, I think, for all of my friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
And I think once you uproot yourself like that, especially right out of college, which is sort of like this formative period, you sort of realize, oh, that also made me happy. Like, pursuing this is great fun, but I don't know how happy I'll ultimately be if I don't have that as well. Like, being 3,000 miles away, it's tough. So I came back. I'm really glad I did it. And when I got – I'm very glad in retrospect also that I came back because of all the stuff that happened once I got back. And my career has taken off a bit since then. And so I just feel like it was a great experience. Also, driving across the country, I cannot understate how much that changed my perspective on the country, on where I am, my place in this universe. Like, I felt like I had the very generic driving through the mountains, being like, oh my God, this is what the world actually looks like moment. And I traveled, you know, throughout my life minimally, but once I was there, it was like, whoa. And definitely inspired my photography as well. I mean, I go every year back to Colorado multiple times because the mountains are where I feel at home now and where I want to photograph. And so I fully recommend getting in your car once the quarantine is over and just driving in one direction and not worrying about what happens.
Yeah. And I know our listeners can't see this, but these are some of the Polaroids I captured on my drive. This is Arizona.
Awesome. Yeah, Arizona was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And also just the little experiences you have when you're on the road like that, driving through towns that you can't even imagine. Why is there an Italian restaurant here in this Western town that has no other buildings? You know, and then eating there and meeting these people and getting stuck in the desert. I got stuck in the desert.
Yeah.
You know, there are just all these little things that are, you know, they paint your life a little bit more interestingly when you look back on them.
I wish I had gone a little slower. I was so gung-ho about like, my career is in California. I just got to get there. And luckily I drove across country with a friend who was like, no, we're going to stop. And we're going to like, look at the Grand Canyon. Cause what are you talking about? Like, and I was like, I'm so glad he forced me to like slow down because I would have just been like, all right, drive, sleep, you like,
right.
missed all of that magic.
Yeah. I got lucky. I've only ever gone like up and down the East Coast. And then now I live here in Tennessee and flew to California once. But, I used to tour in bands back in the day, like in a band actually. And there was, I just wish I would have been more inclined to be the guy with the camera because of just, I have all the memories of it, but you know, you can only see those kind of in dreams.
Yeah.
But it's just, like, there is really nothing like that, though. Like, just showing up in, like, the middle of nowhere to play a show for 13 people. Mm-hmm. And it's such an experience. I really think, even if you're not in a band or not a something, like, get in your car and go on tour. Like, it's so much fun.
And document it. That's the important part.
Exactly. I was talking to my girlfriend yesterday actually just randomly about that whole experience and how I sort of regret the way I documented it. And she was telling me like, yes, but you've evolved since then. I think it's easy to look back on stuff like you said, Tim, where like you had an experience, you wished you photographed it a certain way or you documented it a certain way. But I think you just have to be comfortable knowing you were who you were back then and you maybe captured it however you did back then, but your perspective on the world has changed and so has your ability to capture it. And so like that's sort of what I've taken away from that. I have some photos from that trip. Like they're not my most proud photos, but at least I took something, I guess. And if I did it again, which hopefully I will one day, I'll obviously probably do a documentary or
something. That'd be so great.
So have you, what kind of jobs were you getting in LA? Were you doing like camera op or?
I was doing some camera stuff. I mean, a PA for some things. And that was just the way to start out. When I got back here to New York, I was at NBC. I was doing this like, it was a production job, but it wasn't like a creative production job. And it was awesome just to be inside the building, inside 30 Rock.
Man. Yeah.
And the other half of my life was at this production company where luckily the owner of this company just liked me a lot and was just like, okay, you got to help out with productions doing this, this, and this. But also go ahead and write something if you want to write something. Go ahead and shoot something if you want to shoot something. And I got to say, I got to tell you that that was one of the most important things that ever happened to me because basically, she said, okay, you want to make a video? Make a video. I had an entire production staff at my disposal. The first time we made one, I thought we were just going to go out and shoot something at the park. And we did. And we came back. And suddenly, the VFX guy was making CGI tears. You know, the editor was doing like...
What?
We were sourcing Shutterstock music. Like, it was like, what are we doing? I thought we were just going to do this for fun. And it turned out, like, over a few years, we made tons of just ridiculous videos. And it definitely made me a much better director. It made me much more interested and knowledgeable about the technical aspects of shooting. And so after I left NBC about 2 years ago and I just decided I'm going to be a full-time freelancer and I just committed to it. And so now I do mostly like commercial work and some music videos and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Man, so is it just you or do you have like a team or how does that all work?
Right now, so I left that production company. I still work with them. Like we collaborate on stuff all the time. Amazingly, so I was there for a while and hopefully they don't listen to this or we'll have to redact it. But my grandmother founded a design company in the 90s and she basically left Macy's.
Whoa.
Where she was like an executive at Macy's and was like, I'm just going to start a design company. And my mom eventually left CBS where she was working and decided I'm going to join her. And honestly, I can't believe they did that. It was an incredible thing that they did. Leave these major companies and start a design company out of her basement. I mean, I'm still inspired by that.
Yeah.
And so fast forwarding to me being at this production company and NBC, we're making stuff. I'm making stuff that I think is getting much better. And my mom eventually one day was just like, I don't really know why you're at these other places. Like we have a studio here that we're just thinking of starting. Like we have a space upstairs. You can maybe develop that into something. And I was just like, whoa, this is an interesting opportunity. And I was a bit nervous at first to throw away those other things.
Yeah. Yeah.
But essentially I joined the company FAI Design Group. I'm sort of like the resident director, I guess you could, or director in residence or however you'd say. So I have this entire floor up here that is like a photo studio, a video studio. I have an office and I do photo shoots for the company when they need it. But I do a lot of freelance video that I simply run through the company. I work with agencies in the city and stuff like that. So it's been this really, I feel very fortunate to have this because
it's amazing.
Yeah, having the studio alone is like a playground out there. Yeah. I mean, if I'm like, and their full staff is downstairs. So if one day I'm just like, all right, we're doing a photo shoot today. Everyone is so excited. They're like, all right, what camera is this? I'm like telling them what a Polaroid Spectra camera is. You know, we're busting out the backdrops. And it's a very fun artistic lifestyle to just have that at your fingertips at all times. So yeah, that's sort of my daily life. And
dream.
I live not far from the studio. So it's like, yeah. So I'm still coming into the studio right now, even though we're, you know, COVID-centric. Yeah. Mm-hmm. COVID-central over here in New York. But nobody is here in this building. So I'm sort of alone here, which is a little bit ghostly, but you know, it's still keeping me a little bit like not from going crazy.
Right.
I'm still
going
somewhere.
Yeah.
See, that's really cool because even in your YouTube videos, I feel like the studio that you shoot those in is like a character too. Like I feel like, oh yeah, dude, he's in that spot again. Like I recognize that, you know, like it's just, I really enjoy that. It gives it what is the word? Like consistency to the videos that is really cool. It's really awesome that you have that. And that is such an amazing story too. Like I've always, back in school, when I was in high school and after high school, I was in the printing world. Like I wanted to own my own print shop. Like that was my dream, to run like a couple mini presses out of my basement and to, you know, do all the design myself. And it was just my whole thing. And like, then the printing industry died. So it was, kind of shot down after that. But
bring it back, Timothy.
You know, now's the time. Now you see all the hipsters doing like letter set type printing and all that fun stuff, but it's just like everything else. I don't remember it's been so long. I mean I'm sure it's like riding a bike. Like if I'd start messing with it again and learning it all over again, it wouldn't take that long. But that's just such an incredible story.
This building, actually, just as a footnote to this, the building was constructed by Cosmopolitan magazine in like 1895, and basically they built it to be their headquarters. And then they were purchased by like Hearst or some major company, and they moved back to the city. They left this cathedral. They built like a Greek cathedral in Westchester.
Whoa.
Like it's totally sticks out like a sore thumb. This building looks insane. And it became a silent movie studio after that. And eventually they cleared that out and a bunch of businesses moved in. So my studio, it was interesting what you said about the character of the way it looks. It actually used to be outside, like part of the studio. I'll show you in the Patreon exclusive after show. I'll show you. We have these pillars in the studio that used to be the exterior of the building.
That's
so
crazy.
It's got this character to it that also makes it really fun to shoot. And there's always a new angle here. There's always a weird little place to go. It's a very weird building. It could collapse at any moment, but we'll be all right.
I can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
A strong gust of wind might take
it
down.
Oh man.
So are you the sole like producer of your YouTube videos as well, or do you have a team to help you? Like, who did your intro? That intro was so good.
I did the intro. Thank you so much. Yeah. I did the intro. I, you know, like I said, my family has like a design background. Mm-hmm. My grandfather was like a hand illustrator for logos in the 40s and 50s. Yeah.
It's totally in your blood.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not a designer. Like I do logo design. I do design for video. It's not necessarily my full-time job, but I loved when I was digging into In an Instant, I was like, oh, wow, okay, now I get to play with this aesthetic.
Yeah.
And I just kind of went crazy with it. As you can see, it's like very primary color-focused. I was able to do some motion graphics for the intro, and I'm having a great time just playing with that. As for like collaborating with other people, like I was saying, I was a little bit nervous kind of going into this. Mm-hmm. I didn't know whether, you know, I haven't like blasted it out to my friends necessarily. Hey guys, I'm making a YouTube video. Can you go shoot with me? I didn't necessarily want to burden anyone with the task of doing this until I knew it was going to be something valuable to the internet, which I still don't know if it is, but hopefully we can build an audience over time. And so I haven't necessarily involved anyone yet. I do have plans in the future to do videos that are shot by, you know, I have plenty of friends that are directors of photography and audio guys. I have film crews that I work with regularly that I could use to make broader videos. Yeah. So I'm hoping, I think once it's justified, I will start involving other people. But until then, I'm having a good time just putting up the camera and screwing up as many times as I want because no one's watching.
Yeah, you're doing a great job. Especially like all your little shout outs. The one was like, shout out to Ants, keep doing your thing. And I was like,
Ants are doing amazing.
I never thought about it until you was like, shout out. I was like, yeah, shout out to Ants.
Yeah, they're doing their thing. They're marching.
Literally.
It's crazy though, because I often think of kind of the pigeonhole that happens when you pick like a certain style, you know, that you're like an instant camera guy, you know, but I feel like, man, now's the time to really rally on this stuff and show, you know, Polaroid and even Fuji that we're here for their film and all that stuff. So it's, I don't think you're going to have much problem picking up traction on the channel once it, you know.
Not at all.
Yeah, I really didn't know when I was starting it. I didn't necessarily have a great marketing plan for how I was going to push the videos. So I was actually pretty shocked upon just posting the first two how many comments were coming in, how many people were liking them. And the other half of that, as you guys know, as YouTubers yourself, you're not exclusively YouTubers, but you have channels. Mm-hmm. There's a bit of a concern. It's like I'm putting something out there into YouTube, which has a notorious personality unto itself. I might get lit up in these comments. I might get trashed. People might say I'm ugly. People might, you know, think these videos are stupid. I don't know what the hell was going to happen. And I've just been blown away by the positivity. I think that's maybe the craziest part about this so far is that I felt immediately that people were receptive of this. They were very like loving in the comments. I was like, wow, this is really nice. People are very nice. I thought this was going to be a madhouse in the comments for some reason. I don't know. I just didn't know. And I don't think there's been like one negative comment about the videos themselves. There's been negative comments about Polaroid as a company and stuff like that, but it's been very positive. And I think right now in such like a hectic world we're in, having that positivity has been just a very welcomed addition to my life, I guess.
No, it's great. I'm glad it's doing well. You deserve it, man.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate it.
And I hate that YouTube has that like reputation that, you know, people are afraid to even do it because of the negative stuff. I feel like I know they're trying to kind of make sure that doesn't happen as much.
Yeah.
But it hasn't happened as much as it has in the past. So maybe either people are chilling out on trolling or we're just lucky that we're in a community that is trying to support each other.
I think that's a big part of it. Yeah. I think that's a huge part of it because I've been entering this community, I guess, vis-a-vis the channel.
Mm-hmm.
I had an Instagram account. I had been taking instant photos for a while, but I wasn't in the community. I didn't think like I was commenting or liking posts, but it wasn't like relevant to the community in any way. So this has been an amazing entry into who these people actually are.
Yeah.
You know, talking with these people every day, it's extremely loving. Everyone is bound together by this desire to create something special on this format that is very tenuous, that could go away at any moment, and everyone's sort of appreciating what they have.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big part of why everybody is so together on this. I don't really know what like the 35 millimeter community is like necessarily. I've read some Flickr threads in the past that were kind of insane.
Yeah,
it gets rough out there.
And it can be rough, I think, but the instant community has been very welcoming.
That's good. That's really good to hear. Because it always bums me out when you have like the armchair experts that, you know, you forget to mention one thing about something and they'll tear your ass apart. Like
they're waiting to correct you.
Like, I just remember saying that one of the cameras that I reviewed on my channel, like, didn't have a bulb mode and it doesn't specifically have a B that you put the camera in. And they're just like, well, how dare you if you don't know that you have to cock the shutter twice, turn the lens inside out, smash it off the ground three times, and then it'll go into bulb mode. And it's like, well, that's a little ridiculous. That's why I wasn't.
Yeah, technically it doesn't. Yeah.
Tim, I am appalled that you would dare produce content that had any misinformation.
I know, it's insane.
It makes me sick.
I'm sick to my stomach still thinking about it.
Yeah.
And it's funny because it's like one of my like biggest viewed videos. It cracks me up because it's got like an insane amount of dislikes all because of the bulb mode.
Who dislikes YouTube videos?
That's what I always say. Like,
I don't know.
What? Just leave it alone.
It's not Reddit. Like the dislike button isn't affecting the rank of anything. It's just negative.
Yeah.
It's just being negative.
I mean, technically in YouTube terms, it's engagement. So you need to look at it like I started doing after I beat myself up for weeks and months and years about the dislike button. I'm now like, hey, you still click something and that means that it could potentially get pushed to one more person.
That's true. Yeah.
It's also funny because like I'll be like, oh, I got 3 dislikes, and my fiance will be like, how many likes did you get? I'm like 47. And he's like,
it's
okay,
the dislikes.
What? And I'm like, you don't understand. It's 3 thumbs down. I'm upset.
Those can stand out for sure. Or one negative comment can stand out much more than all the positivity. But luckily it's not that bad.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah, and I love your guys' YouTube channels,
Oh, thank you.
Since we're on it.
Hopefully I have a space like yours to shoot in one day. That's the goal.
Yeah. You guys are welcome to come visit if, you know, once this is over.
Yeah, well, we were supposed to be in New York with Lamography.
I know.
So we're hoping, I mean, everything gets, who knows, but.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we will hopefully sooner rather than later. That's all I guess.
Yeah, I could show you around. You know, we could go to the studio.
Yeah.
I just can't believe, on a side note, like our governor is opening up this state and I'm extremely terrified.
Oh God, I didn't know.
Yeah, that's gonna be a no for me, dog.
Yeah, well, it's funny because, you know, I've gotten approved for unemployment and stuff like that, thankfully. And
yeah, that's nice.
Like, since becoming sick with the whole diabetes thing, like, I kind of have an excuse not to go back to work for an, I'm just like, as long as I can, like, have some sort of an income, it doesn't have to be much, you know, just enough to get our bills paid and eat.
Yeah.
I'm cool with maybe not going back to work right away and playing it safe, because it's scary. People are dying and they're just they're like, oh, it's nothing. You know, the governor said he's opening the state because our recover rate is higher than our death rate. And we're like breaching on 10,000. You know, it's not LA or New York or anything like that, or even Pennsylvania, like where my mom is. I'm just like terrified for her.
Yeah.
I know.
And it just, it's mind blowing that they, you know, that people are that stubborn. And I don't know. It just,
yeah, it's insane. I was on that live Zoom thing you guys did.
I saw you in there.
Where you were sort of talking about photography during COVID, and I didn't say anything because I was like, I don't know anyone. There's like 50 people in here. I don't know what's going on here. But I thought it was interesting to hear people's perspectives. There's definitely communities where going out and taking photos right now is like, oh my God, what is that person doing?
Yeah.
You know, this person is breaking key violations, you know. But and I've seen some photographers, especially in the New York area, that are going out and shooting in Manhattan, and their Instagram comments are just like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I don't know necessarily where I stand on that, because I'm guilty of driving through Manhattan a few weeks ago because I was just curious.
Yeah.
And I knew that I wasn't putting myself or anyone else in danger because we were staying in the car. You know, we didn't interact with anyone. We weren't 100 feet near anyone. And I don't necessarily know where I stand on it, because I know we were being safe, but I also know America is not very smart. Like, we're not like the smartest group. And people, if they're given a little rope, will do something stupid. So I agree, Tim. I don't think that's the right move. And it's just going to lead to people doing stupid stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, there's plenty of people who don't even believe this is an
issue. I know.
You know.
5G, they think it's 5G internet or whatever.
I mean, my cell data has been slower. I mean, they might have something there. I mean,
it's insane.
I don't know.
Oh, geez.
But I'm excited for once this is over and we can start seeing people again and photographing, you know, humans again. I mean, my girlfriend is, I don't know when she's going to get sick of me, but she's my subject
Same.
Right now.
Yeah.
And my cats. Mm-hmm. Man, I've wasted so many dollars on cat photos that I can't even... I don't even want to think about it right now, because I have this pile of Polaroids I took in the last days, and
that's awesome.
Like 25% of them are of the same cat in the sleeping position he's in like every day.
Cats are doing amazing right
they
now.
They are.
Cats and dogs. My dogs are loving it.
Dogs are hype right now.
Yeah.
Cats, I guess, maybe want us to leave. I don't know.
Yeah, I think my cats are
not sure where
sick
they
of
stand.
Us.
Yeah.
They're just like, are you guys ever going to leave again? Like, we like to go in the cabinets and we like to eat the plants. Like, can you please leave so we can destroy this place? We'll be right back with our listener interaction for Ben right after this message from our sponsor.
Support for Analog Talk also comes from Polaroid Originals. Go to PolaroidOriginals.com and use the offer code AnalogTalk10 at checkout to receive 10% off your next purchase.
We're going to give you the tough question now. If you could only shoot with one camera for the rest of your life, Desert Island camera, what would it be and why?
Well, the context of the island is very important to me. I think the fact that you're on an island is something to consider, because every time someone comes on here, you know, a lot of people struggle with this question, and I fully understand why. I think I'm naturally compelled to say, oh, I'd shoot with the SLR 680, you know, no question about it.
Camera.
Best Polaroid camera ever. But, you know, I'm on an island and my entire life is gone. And now I got to document this island. And I don't know necessarily that like a square format Polaroid film is the right move. Knowing that there's a dark room on the island, that's another consideration.
Yeah.
I think I would probably want to shoot with like a Pentax 6.7.
Ooh.
Because you'd want the larger canvas. You know, you got this island. You're alone here. I think you'd want to capture more of it. And I think I love medium format, and that would probably be my go-to. And then I would want to have an SLR 680 there. I mean,
in the back pocket.
You know. Yeah. In the back pocket, take a photo of some wildlife. You know, I don't know what I'm going to find on this island. Maybe a hatch.
Yeah.
Never know.
Oh, you never man. Know. That's right. I always forget. Chris, you've never watched Lost.
I've never watched it. I know.
Yeah, that's devastating to hear.
Well, I know. You mentioned 30 Rock, and we actually just started 30 Rock like
ooh, that's a
last
good
week.
One too.
So I'm like in the 30 Rock, like another episode, another episode. Yeah, another episode. No, keep going. So maybe Lost will be next. I don't know.
Yes, I think it should be next. Yeah. The island needs
like
you.
Started over right after. I think we have 10 or 11 episodes left until it's like over. Like we're on season 6. Like Locke just destroyed the temple or Flock, I should say. And
Chris is like,
spoiler.
Yeah, you won't remember any of this when it comes down to it. But we're already like sitting there because we always, it's like our routine. We eat lunch and watch an episode of Lost. Mm-hmm. We get ready for bed and watch an episode of Lost. So it's this routine we've started doing again since we have nothing else to do.
It'd be devastating to let that go. I guess you can start from the beginning.
Yeah, that's what we're already like, dude, I can't wait to start this over. Like, do you remember how happy everybody is like in the first couple seasons? And it's just like,
yeah.
Man. But anyway, yeah, sorry.
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
We had to mention that. Sorry, definitely. Chris.
That's okay. Second part of the question. Is there anything you're lusting after right now? Any white whale cameras? Anything you're like, I've never shot, but oh man.
Yes. I think I do have a couple of white whale cameras. One of them is the Widelux. We were talking about the Jeff Bridges interview earlier. Yeah. I think something that is interesting, I also shoot 35mm and medium format, but occasionally as someone who really grew up with digital, I guess, or just becoming very used to the process and format of digital. I think something that appeals to me greatly about some of the variations of film that exist is that they can do things that digital cameras cannot do.
Yeah.
So the Widelux is such an interesting camera because it's providing a wholly new format.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of pricey, and I know they break a lot, so I'm a little bit nervous about like diving into that. But that's definitely one of them. And I also really want a Polaroid 600 SE, the Goose camera, that gigantic boxy thing that was used by journalists. It has variable backs, and I don't think it's common to find one with like a 600, you know, instant film back, but that's definitely something I want.
What's it called?
It's called the Polaroid 600 SE.
Okay.
And it's a beast. I mean, it has interchangeable lenses.
Oh, wow.
It's probably, like, everyone talks about the SX70 and the SLR 680 as being the best Polaroid cameras, and I still would argue that, but the 600 SE is providing something definitely different and perhaps better if you get very familiar with it. So that would be a really cool thing to shoot on. I want one of those.
It's really cool too, because I've been seeing a lot of different companies pop up now with instant backs for, you know, the RB67 or stuff like that.
Yeah.
But they're still just like a little out of my price range. You know, $300 is $300, especially at times like this. I don't have $300 right now, but that's definitely something I wish. I don't know if Polaroid had a suggestion box, I would definitely scribble something down.
Polaroid is weird about that, because you often see those backs coming out and they're almost always for Instax.
Yeah,
I actually would say 99 to 100% of the time they're for Instax, because Instax is more of like an open source format in a sense. Like Lomography makes cameras for it. There are no Polaroid cameras that are not made by Polaroid. So that is, but it also opens up opportunities for the Instax format that I think are creatively really interesting. So I do want one of those backs. I want to try that. I agree, though. They're kind of pricey. And anytime you find a Polaroid back on eBay, it's like $600 or something ridiculous.
It's insane.
Like,
it's insane.
Give me a break. Also, I sometimes feel bad even suggesting in videos. Like I recorded a video that's coming out in 2 weeks about the SX70 and SLR 680 and just like the differences and things like that. And they are expensive cameras. And it's sort of easy to forget that. Because when I bought a $10,000 camera once, and it was like, okay, that's where my mind's at in terms of what I'm willing to spend on a digital device.
Right.
And then when you come into the film world, there's such a wide gamut of price points and people's willingness to spend money on something that is probably a hobby. And it's something I needed to sort of check myself on, because most people are just doing this for fun.
Yeah.
And you can't be like, why don't you go outside and spend $300? Like, it's great. Yeah. It's the best thing you can have. Well, that's not necessarily what everyone's doing here. And so you got to give love to the impulse.
Yeah.
You got to give love to the 660. You know, there's a lot to mine out of that too. And I think it's interesting that we as a community are such an array of people. There's people that are really serious, that are spending a lot of money on film and a lot of money on cameras. Mm-hmm. And there's some people who just are learning for the first time. And I put out a video that was really the beginner's intro to film formats. That was like the fourth video I released, and I was a little bit reticent of doing like a beginner's video, but the reaction to it was very warm because people are like, I'm just getting into this.
Yeah.
Like, it's awesome seeing this. And I really like that too. So I hope I can provide more of that with the channel.
Dude, I love that video too. It was just really cool to see the breakdown of the different prices and all that. Because, I mean, even Instax isn't cheap. I mean, I know we all say it's like, oh, I shoot Instax because it's so much cheaper and Polaroid, blah, blah, you know, but it's like, it's still damn expensive.
Yeah. It's very subjective what people consider cheap. And, you know, Instax is cheap in comparison to Polaroid, but it's still 1,000 times more expensive than shooting a digital photograph, which is free. So it's a bit of an adjustment for some people, I think.
It's just crazy that there's cameras out there. Like, we were talking on Instagram not too long ago about the Mint RF.
Oh my God.
Like, that camera I would kill to just, you know, even try one.
Yeah.
No, I know. A lot of when the Mint RF 70 is like $700 to $800. Yeah. And it's by far the most expensive integral instant film camera, maybe of all time. Like, I have to check that. But even at its height, no Polaroid camera was that expensive. So, it's weird. A lot of times I justify expenses in photography and filmmaking by, you know, how will this pay off for me?
Yeah,
I'm buying this really expensive camera, but I have a photo shoot next week. And, you know, I'll be returns on that or including it in the budget. And Polaroid is not that.
No.
It's very much a personal thing. You are just – the money is going away and it's never coming back.
Yeah.
So it's definitely, I have to rewire a little bit sometimes when I'm thinking about spending in this subgenre, I guess. But I don't know. It's so fun. How do you not do it?
Do you have a ton of cameras?
Yeah. Another question I was going to ask.
I have a ton of cameras. I have way too many cameras. I don't know how many cameras. I probably have 25 total cameras across the spectrum of cameras. You know, I have multiple impulses, a 660, an SX70, an SLR 680, multiple Lomography cameras, Instax mini, Instax wide. Once you start digging into the hobby, if you become obsessed with it, it's like I said, a slippery slope because there's so many different things to try.
Exactly. Also, like, it's one of the fun parts of it is like, I'm also going to collect everything that was ever made at Polaroid. You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, Polaroid cameras are in themselves art pieces. And so you might buy a Sun 660, which looks amazing. It's like the classic Polaroid look.
Camera.
And then you might graduate to an SX70 or something, but you don't want to sell that. Why would you sell the 660?
No.
It's a beautiful object that you own now.
Exactly.
So you end up accruing these cameras, and I love having them around. In the after show, I'll sort of bring my phone around and show you some of the stuff I got on the shelves. But yeah, it's what are you going to do? You just got to do it.
I mean, for me, it's part of the fun. So
is part of the fun. It's part of the fun of film photography in general. You get introduced to this world of variations that you never saw in digital. When you buy a digital camera, that's the generation of camera you purchased. Maybe you have to buy two of them if you're shooting a wedding or something. And with film cameras, there's just this, it's like walking into a candy store for the first time. I got to try the Reese's. I got to try the taffy. Yeah, mostly those two, the Reese's and the taffy. But
perfect analogy.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, so I own quite a bit. I've sort of settled though on my film cameras, not my non-instant film cameras. I have the Canon EOS 10S, which was like the second generation of the EOS line that Canon produced in the 90s. And I don't think I'm going to necessarily move on from that. It's kind of servicing all my 35 millimeter needs. I also have the AV1, which is like the weird cousin of the AE1. And the Pentax 645N2. And that's sort of like my setup for that. Like, I don't think I need to go further unless someone has a wide lux. They want to.
There you go.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Ben, this has been so good. Thank you for coming on and sharing all your knowledge and re-inspiring us. Where can everybody check out the YouTube channel? First of all, we will try.
Yes. First of all, you can go to YouTube, youtube.com/inaninstant. In an instant, you can find me on Instagram at the.instantgram. This is a friggin' riddle. My personal account is Fraternally. That's just the username. And my website is fraternally.com. So I have quite a footprint on the internet. You could probably find find me in plenty of places, but those are the instant camera, instant film related places.
Awesome. Timothy, what about you?
Guys, head over to Instagram. You can find me at Timothy Makeups. I also make film photography related YouTube videos. Easiest way to find it is go to the search bar. Just type in Timothy Makeups. You'll find a whole bunch of stuff there. Chris, where are you?
So I am Chris B. Photo on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. We are Analog Talk Pod on Twitter, Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram, and we have a Facebook page and a group.
Join it.
Yeah, that's it for us.
Guys, just join it.
Hang out, post photos, post whatever you want, start the conversation. We love seeing it. Ben, thank you again so much. This has been incredible.
Thank you guys for having me. Again, it's a huge honor. I'm happy to be on the show.
Awesome. All right, guys, we'll see you next time.
Bye. First off, we want to thank Ben for coming on the show. In an Instant is definitely one of my favorite YouTube channels. I'm completely obsessed with what you're doing. Same with Chris, I believe. Thanks again for coming on. I hope everybody enjoyed Polaroid Week, Spring 2020. I know I shot, an insane amount of Polaroids. I think Chris is out there shooting and ordering Polaroid film as well. Guys, we just love Polaroid so much. So that's going to take us to Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. Just for a buck or two, you can get the show 2 days early every Monday. It's usually posted by 9 a.m. We also have a bunch of other stuff over there. We're doing Patreon after shows, Patreon special shows, just a whole bunch of stuff. Guys, head over, check it out, see if it's something you're interested in. And until next week, we will see you soon. Later.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.